We talked just as we ended up last class, talked about this organization, and obviously a non-biblical organization as we introduced the class. And as you look at the structure of the organization, you see something that is in fact a corporation, which is just what they claim to be, among other things. But they claim to be a Christian organization, but it's organized like a and functions much like a corporation does. And within that corporation, or within that religion, either way you want to take it, they have some designation and levels for their people. And that's what this session on hierarchy of members is talking about. And it is a hierarchy because it is this person exists and that person, you know, this class reports to that group and this class reports to that guy throughout. And so you see the branch servant. We talked about the Watchtower Society that's in New York being a corporation of New York. And also the headquarters is there for the corporation that was corporation that was actually incorporated in Pennsylvania, both in New York. But that New York corporation itself is what they call a branch, and it has as its leadership a branch servant. They may be over in other places, may be over several nations. So we talked about that a bit. Reporting to the branch servant, or a number of districts reporting to the branch and leading those districts or district servants in each one of those districts. And they have reporting to them circuits, and that's where we got to. And so within the circuits, and there may be upwards of 25 or so of these circuits, reports to a district. And within this circuit, you have a circuit servant. And then beyond that, you have congregations, finally. And so in a congregation, the kingdom hall that you'll see, that's where they'll meet when you drive around, you have a congregation that meets. And it wasn't clear to me in reading, there actually may be more than one congregation that meets in a kingdom hall. I wasn't real clear about that. But at least it'll hold one. And within that kingdom hall, there is a group of seven servants, overseers as they call them as well, as far as role goes. And I've listed them here for you. There's a head dog, a congregational servant, we call him, and he's in charge of the congregation. He's appointed by the society. Remember, we talked about how congregations originally just had elders. They were independent and elders within the organization and selected by the congregation. Now it's top down is the way it comes about. And so you have a congregational servant that has been, interesting enough, he has to have been a JW for 1 year, it was all. And then faithful in his attendance. Then you have an assistant to him. Again, he's appointed by the head organization. He also ends up being their conductor of their study, their Sunday study. By the way, the JW, as best I can tell, on Sunday, maybe on Sunday, they'll have a lecture of some sort, maybe for an hour. And then they'll break out from that. And by the way, this is open to anybody that gets invited, I suppose, walks in. Then they'll have an hour or so dedicated to studying a chapter out of the Watchtower magazine. And then Wednesday they'll meet also. And Wednesdays they have a more in-depth study, supposedly, Bible study, for the membership. And then on Friday they have what we'll describe down here under the so-called ministry school servant. They have this ministry school. And also, they can invite outsiders into that, non-JWs into that. And it's really not a, you know, it's kind of like people refer to Sunday Bible class as Sunday school. That's kind of along this line. They have it's really a special training study. And they study out of this theocratic aid to kingdom publishers. That's one of the books. Second book is Equipped for Every Good Work. And third one is Qualified to Be Ministers. And this is what they study out of. And as a JW, they give you, you just keep repeating this stuff over and over to try to set you up to be successful when you go out and perform your ministry witnessing to the neighborhood. So it's a pretty hefty study. Then the area study conductor has charge of this area study on Friday nights. That, as I mentioned, takes care of both members and non-members. And then there is another fellow that they call the Bible study servant. He's really there to take care of back calls. That is, when somebody comes out and visits you, and there seems to be, they report back that you may be a possible candidate for further teaching when they send back somebody. And that's the back call, so somebody takes care of that. Next are the pioneers. These are people that are actually in the congregation, but they're different than just other people. Pioneers fall into two classes. These pioneers, in general, men or women, and it doesn't matter, men and women, they have to have been baptized 6 months before they apply to be a special pioneer or pioneer, and have to attend the theocratic ministry school. Again, a society decides who these people are. You apply, the society decides. And they are sometimes are associated with the congregation, but other times they come out of the congregation, they actually are sort of pioneers at large. They go a variety of different places. They're looked upon as spiritual guides as well. And their job, as the name implies, is to pioneer the work by going door to door. So the people that show up at your door are considered pioneers. And they have two classes of those. Special pioneer has to put in 150 hours a month. And they get their books and their... Here's where the publishing business comes into play, which is the way the Mormon, the JW raise, apart from tithing, apart from contributions, is how they raise their money, is they publish stuff, and they sell it. Well, if you're a pioneer, you get a discount. So the special pioneer gets a substantial enough discount that he's really not supposed to hold another job. His job is book sales. You can follow that. And he devotes himself to doing that. Then you have a general pioneer, and he puts in less than 150 hours a week, a month, rather, and more along the lines of 100 to stay in that class. But he can have a part-time job. And again, he gets a discount, but he doesn't get a good discount on the materials as a special pioneer. So that's kind of their hierarchy. And then you've got what they call publisher, and he's just the little man on the totem pole. There's in your appendices something called an appendix number 5, and in that I've listed what they call their 7 steps. So congressional publisher sooner or later has to go through those if he's going to make that. A person has to go through those. So, you know, you find all these, if you study your Bible carefully, you'll find all these positions in your Bible. And when you do, I'd like to give you the test, and you can come show them to me, and I'll tell you did it right or wrong. That's their organization. It's really intended to make A, to sell materials, and B, and really, you know, you look at how they're organized. They're trying to prepare the people that are doing the work, prepare them to be able to go out and be successful doing what they want to do. And then secondarily, they're trying to grow the organization, obviously. for the things that come along with that, whatever that happens to be. Okay, everybody understand that? Enough on that. They've had a reorganization. We talked about consistency on both these groups, Mormons and JWs. And when you start I guess there's two things. One, when you're a human and you're trying to promulgate some kind of a theology, and that theology, and that group that you create out of that, as a result of that theology, continues on over a period of time with more people getting involved. Sooner or later, you start crossing yourself up. And some of the things that you've said, as we saw with the Mormons, that don't come true. Well, then you've got to make arrangements somehow to evolve that so you don't lose everybody. Well, the JWs had the same thing. And one of the things that you look at over history, and we'll see as we get further on about their prophecies, it's not unlike the Mormons. They made prophecy after prophecy after prophecy, and none of them come true. And they have other issues where they have crossed themselves. This consistency issue gets in their way. One of them is going to be around their leadership. And it will not be very long. In fact, they're already probably trying to bring this change in. But it won't be very long before they'll have to. And it's this. Let me describe it. I'm just kind of trying to set it up for you. Remember we talked about the governing body. The governing body, pre-70, 71 time frame, and the board of directors were identical. They were seven of the same people. They functioned in two. One hour they had one hat on, 1 hour they had a different hat on. They were serving as the board of directors or the religious side of the organization. Then they grew it in 70, 71. And they made it where it didn't have to be the same seven people. So they ended up having a governing body that was a total of 11 members, and they had seven directors as well in that governing body, in that organization. And what they claimed they were trying to do is demonstrate leadership, their leadership derived from, follow me on this, they added, there's seven, they added four more, ranked 11. And it was to show their leadership derived authority from an apostolic source rather than from a Pennsylvania corporate law. And I read that, and it's hard to fathom, at least it is for me, how in the world they come to that conclusion based on the nature of the organization they created this 11-member governing body. It's not self-evident to me that makes it right, makes it apostolic pattern at all. And yet that's what they were trying to do, and the only reason it is that is to the organization is because they say it is. And then in 2000, and this is the one I think that is going to create the problem for them, their consistency issue, they separated out the board of directors from the governing body. So there's two different, nominally independent organizations. The people serving on the board of directors are different than the people serving on the governing body. They did that, and I gave you the three organizations that describe the new corporation entities in the U.S. The probable reason they did this was legal, avoid suits. They were getting sued because of major suits, I guess, or the suits involving the major doctrines were had to do with blood transfusion. And the other one was disfellowship. And we may talk about that more later in a later class. But be as it may, they set up this legal entity to try to separate their liability from suits away from the governing body. Now, the governing body in the JWs, remember the 144,000 class, right? 144,000, that class got closed in 1935. You weren't born in 1930, before 1935. And this is another one of those places where there's some consistency problems. Some of their writings would indicate that 1935 you had to be a JW. Others were you had to be born before 1935. We'll take that date. You had to be born before 1935 to be part of the 144,000. The 144,000 are the anointed. If you're not in the 144,000, you're not anointed. If you're not anointed, God's not speaking to you. You do not have revelation of any sort of spiritual guidance that you can feed the flock with. The governing body today is made up of people who would have been born before 1935. So they're okay. Most of them. They actually have some people already in the governing body that do not fit the 144,000 class. When that group dies by their own doctrine, the other crowd, the other sheep, the great crowd, everybody else, are not anointed, do not have the influence of the Holy Spirit in their lives so that they can relate God's truth and can feed the flock. So there's a time coming when the governing body will no longer have, by their own doctrine, will no longer have God speaking through them. Of course, that's going to change. Don't worry. We'll find out how to keep that from happening. And it seems to be some indications now that one of the ways that might happen is those who have gone before who were of the class will have the ability to speak to the current group, whoever that is, from the dead. So the anointed will be speaking through the... I tell you all this because I want you to see, you know, and you'll see this when we talk about prophecy. This is a evolving... These kind of groups can evolve. So it's a little bit like a chameleon that can change. So now this is it. Look, just like the Mormons. I know I stress this to people. Just like the Mormons, people who show up at your door are sincere, most likely are very sincere. But it is a cult. You can't escape the fact that this is a cult. It's evolved over the years, refined their capability, and so this is the product of that. So people are just being led astray, and they're getting trapped by that. And sometimes you wonder, how can that be? But it is. A little bit of a side, because I think this is the nature of this organization. I gave you a chart in there, size and growth. You can read that on your own. The first thing is, I don't know if I distinguish this, but the first set of data, table, annual worldwide statistics, that's basically that's older data. I tried to update it in 2 and 3, just to give you, these are just, you know, pieces of data to give you some sense of how big the organization is. I do want to mention publications. We talked about some of these. Watchtower, they had an average printing of about 25 million when I had my data. And it is the largest circulation of any religious magazine in the world. And that's just a fact. It's supposedly published in around 150 languages. And 135 of those are printed out simultaneously, and all at the same time. Big dump. Awake is published in 86 languages. Its average printing is something like 22 million. They look at Awake as a primary vehicle for reaching out to non-believers, whereas Watchtower Today, right now, Watchtower, they actually put out two versions. You get a version for us and a version for the JWs that they can study from. But these are both magazines that come out on a monthly basis, I think, now. Then there's another one, a third one, Knowledge Leads Everlasting Life, and that's a textbook kind of thing. And it's used by the JWs in their home Bible study program. So if they show up and they get a study with you, and you don't, and they're going to study with you, and you don't know anything about the Bible. In other words, you're not studying trying to convert them, you're trying to convert you. This is a book they'll use. And there are a couple others, New World Translation. You're going to hear more about that than you want to hear. And they also talk, you know, they produce videos, audio cassettes to take out. Both to take out and just to broadcast in various ways. Okay? Enjoy the lecture while you've got a chance, because it's going to change with time. So let's roll on. If you got any questions about any of this, just ask. Interrupt me.
They don't, you mentioned here the variety of versions used. You know, there was a time when you could take the King James Version of the Bible and, you know, have some kind of discussion. But that doesn't happen now. I mean, like when we all got together, oh, it was the one. But even, you know, when I had the last one.
They don't use King James Version.
No,
they don't use it anymore.
What
the next section is under dishonesty, New World Translation, I think that's where you're reading that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The JW is a printing organization, a publishing organization. And over their history, you see that in Bibles. And that's really what's laid out here for you. They have used and printed various editions of the King James Version, and they picked up on something called the Lisa Version, which is an English text placed alongside Hebrew. Another one was the Murdoch, which was a translation into English out of the Syriac. So it's, you know, something's gone from, if you go back in history, from Greek to Syriac, likely to Syriac, and now it's come from Syriac to English. That's what he was, Murdoch. A Newberry Bible incorporated marginal references that drew attention to occurrences of the name Jehovah. Okay, so they, you know, that's the divine name, Jehovah. So they kind of move. They hold those kinds of books in high esteem as a rule. There's something called the Verum Bible, and I think probably a lot of you have heard of the Young's Literal Translation. There was a period of time they were either printing or distributing those. So they're going through an evolution of what Bible they like, what this boils down to as far as their official recognized text. And then they arranged for a number of other, while they could print out some of these things like King James Version, what they were looking for is to have control, where they had to pay they had to ever pay King James Version royalty, but where they had to pay royalty on some of these others. And so they started working with the idea of trying to get actual rights to print these various books and reap the rewards that came out of that. So there's one called the New Testament, newly translated and critically emphasized in 1890. That was, they used that to, because they thought it supported the idea of parousia, the Greek parousia word, instead of meaning coming, to mean presence, which was something that fit better with their return of Jesus, the presence of Jesus as opposed to the coming of Jesus in 1914. We'll talk about that when we get to prophecy. Then they had a special printing of the Holman Linear Parallel Edition that had cross references to the Watchtower publications in the margin. We talked about, or I introduced the emphatic diaglot earlier. They actually got possession of the printing plates for that thing. and started printing it in 1902. And there's some other things that went along with that. I won't bore you with it. But it's clear that the emphatic diaglot is the sort of the ancestor of the New World Translation. And it gave birth to it, more or less. And you can see that. Those people that study those kind of things can show you that, how that's true. You all may have heard of Bruce Metzer, Dr. Metzer of Princeton. He writes books. He's a language specialist, particularly in the Greek language. And he's one of the guys I saw referenced as far as making a connection between New World Translation and the emphatic diaglot. Then in 1926, they moved to create a factory in Brooklyn, and they started printing out the emphatic diaglot from there. And they got printing plates for the King James Version. They bought those, and they started printing that book, and they put a concordance in that book, which was only relevant to Jehovah's Witnesses. And they described it as a New World Theocratic Concordance. And they got the 1901 rights of the 1901 ASV. And they like that again because it features the name of God as Jehovah. So that fits their need. Bible Living English is another one of that they print. Again, because it has the quote divine name of Jehovah. Having done all that, and you see the history, I gave you a long list. They bought out, printed, distributed all these Bibles, and then they concluded that they were all defective. And it was time to have a different version. And that's where the New World Translation will get its birth. They saw, I'll give you a quote here, inconsistencies or unsatisfactory renderings affected with sectarian traditions or worldly philosophies, so it's not full harmony. So they moved ahead. They have formed a translation committee. This is of anointed witnesses. So these are some more of these anointed people we talked about a while ago. And I mentioned in an earlier lesson they put out six volumes originally, and then they finally have one volume. They put out parts of the Bible, the Old Testament, in six volumes, and in 1961 they put out the whole Bible. And that's the New World, basically the New World Translation you would get today. They did have to make some changes in it with time. They've had a number of releases as a result of, or a number of additions, if you like. Brought about for needs to change. The translation committee and look, if you do have a JW to show up, they're going to want to use the New World Translation. We'll talk about one issue when we talk about the nature of God. Their New World Translation that they've overseen will treat John 1:1. In a way that will describe Jesus as a God. Any reputable Bible translation, you read John 1:1, you're going to come away with the same conclusion that you'll get out of, that you have right this minute, and that is that Jesus was the Son of God. Jesus is God. Not a God, but is God. And we'll look at that and spend a little bit of time on that just to show you when we get to the nature of God. But the reason I bring that up is what the JWs are claiming is all these other Bibles had these problems, right? So they formed a translation committee. They would not describe who that was on that committee, unlike most translations. But because of people that have left the JWs, it is known fact about who was on the committee. And the only person on the committee, translation committee, that had any Greek schooling, and it was rudimentary, was France. Remember, France was in school in University of Cincinnati for 2 years, 2 to 3. They probably had a year or two of Greek. And that was the Greek on the committee, a year or two of training. Okay. And I've listed for you the ones that have come up as the names on that committee. All those names you see, France, Nor, etc. You've heard some of them. These were all either part of the governing body or would be part of the governing body at the time. And France was, say, was the principal translator. He really was the translator, if there was any of them that could translate anything. And we talked about the trial in Scotland and how they challenged him on his knowledge of, in that case, Hebrew was what they were working on, and pretty much destroyed his credibility as a truthful witness when he caught him in a corner about could he not read Hebrew. And while he said he could, he couldn't, and originally had been saying he couldn't. And so this is New World Translation, just as a matter of fact, is a translation that is the inferior translation. In fact, you're probably giving it a lot of credit if you even say it's a translation, frankly. It is a more appropriately, I would call it, a book that was largely transcribed from or made up from other sources, not necessarily Greek, not necessarily manuscripts, just other sources, like Diagoge being one of them, and adjustments made there and two to line up with JW doctrine. That's really what the JW, the New World Translation, is. Now, having said that, okay, you talk to JW, don't let that bother you. I think, like the Mormons, there's someplace else you probably need to focus rather than trying to argue with them about John 1:1, although I think we'll talk about this. I think you can shut down John 1:1 in 5 minutes. With their New World Translation, by the way, so we'll talk about that when we get to it. But that's the source of it. There's some other books they put out, Kingdom Interlinear Translation of the Greek Scriptures. By the way, let me back up. I say it's rejected as an accurate translation in this item. You see it spelled Mantley. Mantley was quoted in this Kingdom Interlinear Translation. He told him to take his name out. They had his name in there. And he told him to take it out. Quit using it. Because the New World Translation was just such an abomination in terms of translation. So that was a good point. I mentioned Metzger earlier, you see what he has to say. And there are a number of people who are Greek scholars of the language, just will tell you that I've written in the past that this is just not an accurate translation. So anyway, they also put out a interlinear there is a interesting quote I found. The interlinear, this KIT of Greek scriptures, and this was 1969. It contained an edition of the New World Translation of Christian Greek scriptures, they called it, on the right-hand side of the page, alongside of the 48 revised Westcott and Hort Greek text, and text underneath, which was basically a literal word-for-word translation. The editions were both signed by the committee, the New Translation, New World Translation, Bible Translation Committee. But here's the quote about the KIT. The most revealing publication of the Watchtower Society is an interlinear translation called the Kingdom Interlinear Translation, published in 1969. In this book, their scripture distortions can clearly be seen. So successful has this publication been in setting JWs free from the Watchtower Society that they have taken it out of print and substituted one of the 1985 edition, in which the distortions are masked much more successfully. We recommend finding the original if at all possible. So it was such a poor job that it created problems for them. So they corrupted that. So that's sort of the history of their books and stuff, particularly New World Translation. Because if you entertain JW, I guarantee you will see it. Their claim, remember they talked a moment ago about the 144,000, the anointed, this is the spokesman, is what they, over history, they've had something that they refer to as the faithful and discreet, faithful and wise, discreet servant. Matthew 24:45. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave who his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Take that verse. Here's the slave put in charge of the household by the master to feed household. So here's the interpretation for you. Originally, Charles Russell was viewed as the faithful and discreet slave put in charge of the JWs, responsible for feeding them their spiritual nourishment. As time went on, the organization concluded that this, first of all, they concluded that one man should not be in this position. That slave is singular. Organization is singular. Governing body is singular. And it morphed into the faithful and discreet slave. The governing body became the faithful and discreet slave, responsible for feeding the flock for spiritual nourishment. Okay, that was a morphing, I call it. So they claim to be that. The society now claims to be that. And the governing body, you see all kinds of writings, they try to self-sell us a little bit by saying they're the representatives. But in fact, what they're claiming is the authority to be the spokesperson for God through the society, to the organization, to the church of the JW. So, you got to listen to the society, what that conclusion comes to. You know, society is connected with God. So if you get your marching orders, when it comes to religious revelation from the society, not the Bible. They, as I mentioned what does that mean? I've got a note here, I'm trying to figure out what it's saying. What I was trying to say. In Romans 13:1, what's Romans 13:1 talking about? In its objection to
government.
Civil government. Well, they took it to, for years they used that scripture to claim that the powers that be were the society representatives, and so every soul was to be in subjection to the powers that be. Doesn't that make sense to you? So you would, therefore, Romans 13 justify the governing body, society, or of the society, being the one that everybody was supposed to listen to. They've changed that, by the way. That's just one of the things they've changed. You see another quote there. We all need help to understand the Bible, and we cannot find scriptural guidance. We need outside the faith industry slave organization. So they're the final authority for spiritual food. And if you don't accept that, you're thrown out. It's fellowship. And in their view, in nurses' fellowship is a complete shunning. Remember, we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about this. When you become a JW, the JW becomes your association and your family. And they're taught that, let me not put too harsh a thing on this, they're really taught not to associate with people like you. Walk to your door, try to convert you, but do not associate with people like you, non-JWs. So, all our association is Jehovah's Witnesses, right? And if for some reason they get disfellowshipped, they get shunned by that body. And the body has got to shun them, or they'll be disfellowshipped. And so you create a real problem for the person who gets thrown out. He has no family to fall back on. I mean, neighbors, whatever, if he's been doing his duty. And he can't come back into the party being shunned by them. So it's a real tough problem for him. So this fellowship in the JW organization is a serious matter to them. All right. We're not going to leave the bells out of the ring. We will pick up, Lord willing, with questions. What event is Matthew 24:1-35 addressing? We will talk about that on Sunday. And we will wrap this section up, not much left there, and we will go off into prophecy.